This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. He is Anthony Pusick. How are you, buddy?
Must watch television on Saturday on ABC.
I know it's going to be.
In this quarter.
Bacchanal. All right, let's just get to it because, you know, it's on our mind. And it was, I think, one of the bigger stories of the night. Good job by the Islanders. They needed a win. They got it. Fifth straight. Jumped out. Had a 3-0 lead after one. Could have been 5-0. And I know, listen, Varlamov, who clearly is the starting goaltender for the New York Islanders moving forward, made some huge saves in succession to keep it scoreless for the Rangers. But, you know, Igor made some big saves, too, where it could have been a lot worse than 3-0. Rangers fight back with a couple of power play goals, and they end up losing the game 4-2. So good on the Islanders. But the conversation now is about what happened at the end of the game, or really the third period. And let's start with the Trocheck, a cross-check from Dobson. It was a penalty. I mean, I think anybody would logically would say that. Now, are penalties missed in those situations? All the time. And you'd love to be some level of accountability from Kelly Sutherland. You know, MSG picked up the replay of him talking to Trocheck, and he's kind of making it look like it was more of a push than a hit. Whatever. It was a missed call, all right? But that's going to happen. That's life. Maybe the Rangers shouldn't have to be so reliant on the power play to score goals. It sucks. It's terrible. But the one that I want to really get into that I'm kind of confused about, Anthony, and I need your help on this, is the collision between Pelech and Zibanejad. Now, I've watched it a bunch of times. I watched it live. I watched the replays from MSG. Spent a lot of time after the game taking a look at it. To me, I just think it's a collision. I think Zibanejad lost where he was. Pelech stopped. I don't know why Pelech stopped. You want to tell me he stopped to intentionally have Mika run into him? That's above my pay grade. I saw a collision. I think, you know, Dave Maloney calling the game on radio saw the same thing. I don't know. You were watching on television. I don't know what Joe Mick had to say about it. And I went into the post game, Anthony, just figuring, all right, I want to find out how Zibanejad is because I did not see him come back. So,
yeah, it kind of went under the radar. You did see him on the bench if you were watching on television at the end there, and Laviolette looking angry at the officials. He was on the bench, which I guess is a good sign.
Right, exactly. And he said he came back in the post-game press conference, so I guess everything is fine with Mika. So that was my concern, just getting prepared for the post-game show. What's the condition of Mika Zibanejad?
Him, Lindgren, Kreider, that could have been a very dangerous game for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kreider came back, and Lindgren came back, and we found out that Zibanejad came back, so no harm, no foul. But at the time, that was my only concern about the collision was, is Mika okay? I'm assuming he went into concussion protocol. He was prone on the ice, and it really looked like it'd be a bad situation. And I was floored with Peter talking about it being a vicious hit. So what says you, Anthony? Were you surprised that Peter went that way? Am I seeing it the wrong way?
Yeah, no, I think you're seeing it the right way. For all the video that you can see, Pelech does not at any point see Zibanejad coming. Maybe he's stopping, and I don't remember exactly the play itself now because all we've been seeing is the replay. If Pelech sees that the play could possibly be going the other way, he stops at a dime in the middle of the ice because he knows that he's going to have to get back and stop a Rangers team that does have the tendency to get out and break out quickly with how skilled their defensemen are and Panarin and other guys in moving the puck forward. Zibanejad is going for a change, clearly. He sees a path to go. Pelech stops. Never, in my opinion, sees Zibanejad coming. And it was an accidental hit. And luckily, at least for now, it seems like Zibanejad is okay, and he's not going to miss any time, which is great news. I agree with you. The more egregious thing to me was the cross-check to the back of Trocheck. I believe it was a penalty. I don't think the Rangers would have won the game or even tied the game as a result of it happening, but the ref was right in front of it, and Kelly Sutherland is a great referee, but how he doesn't call it is beyond me. Trocheck was obviously upset about it, and I think maybe Laviolette kind of taking a look at everything that happened in that third period where one of his guys goes down on a blind, if he wants to call it a blindside hit, that's fine. I don't think that's what it was, but if he considers it a blindside hit, okay. And then at the end of the game, he doesn't. His other forward, one of his other top forwards, gets cross-checked in the back into the boards, and there's no penalty called there. I think he's kind of equating the two, and I think that's what Patrick Roy was kind of insinuating when he said sometimes when you're frustrated, you say things. I think that the more egregious one was the Trocheck hit. I think the Zibanejad one was just an unfortunate collision. Look, we saw a ref in the Penguin game a couple days ago have to get stretchered off, get taken to the hospital
right.
because of an inadvertent collision. And I think that that's really all that was. But you know what? Especially with the way that the language was after the game, a very important game for the Islanders on Saturday, and possibly the Rangers too, now that they only have 3-point leads on Carolina and Boston. You might see Matt Rempe back in the lineup. I would be shocked if he wasn't in.
Yeah, I would think that's probably the case. But listen, Peter Laviolette was a defenseman.
Yes.
And played 12 games in the National Hockey League with the Rangers, but he was a defenseman. Pelech's a defenseman, so maybe there is something to... That's kind of a way of getting away with a hit without anybody seeing it. I don't know if Peter kind of knows that move and that's what he's talking about.
Maybe.
I can't get inside the head, whatever. I can only look at what I see and my level of expertise as a non-player, but somebody who's observed hockey for 40-plus years. It looked like a collision to me. I lean on people like Dave Maloney, who's an analyst for a long time, played as a defenseman in the league as well. Thought that it was an inadvertent collision, although I haven't spoken to Dave since Peter's comments, and Dave watches games incessantly, and he also rewatches games, so maybe he's got a little bit of a different opinion than he did live on the air.
I also just don't like the elbow thing down at the top that people are talking about, saying, oh, well, Pelech put his elbow up. It's like, well, no, if you're stopping and then you're going to try and change your direction, the natural reaction is to bring your hand up towards your stick, which is going to bring your elbow up. And again, I can't exactly see where Pelech's eyes are, but I don't think he sees the bandage.
I don't think anybody saw it. It was an odd situation where, you know, it looked like Mika's gesturing, and it was a weird... There's nothing worse than a hit when you're not prepared to brace yourself, and I think that's why it was so bad. But Mika's fine, then let's move on.
And you want to be angry at the first period. Because that was embarrassing.
Well, that's what I don't want to get away from here. And you know, everybody's talking about Rempe and then the whole Bacchanal on Saturday, national television, ABC. Listen, you got 3 games left to clean up your mess. And when I say mess, I mean every team is not perfect, and you want to try to clean up whatever you can. And there's a few issues. If the Rangers want to win a Stanley Cup, they've got 3 games and 9 periods to get it cleaned up. And well, we've talked about the 5-on-5 and being over-reliant on the power play, and it was no surprise. Rangers have the fourth-best power play, and the Islanders have the worst kill in the NHL, and the Rangers were able to take advantage of that. But we've talked about 5-on-5. The one thing we haven't talked about that I do think needs to be cleaned up is their starts. They routinely spot teams 1 or 2 goals. They've got the second-most comebacks, which you look upon as a good thing because it shows you have heart and you're resilient, but it also shows you trail a lot to have to come back. And how many times have we seen that the Rangers give up the first goal? I mean, there was one stretch a couple of weeks ago where it was like 7 of the last 8 games they'd given up the first goal. Gave up the first goal against the Islanders. Gave up the first goal against Montreal. That's a tough thing. And then you look at the periods, Rangers are dominant in the second. They're dominant in the third. They've got a +1 goal differential in the first period. By far, their least amount of goals scored are in the first. Now, they don't give up a ton, but it kind of points to they do sometimes take a while to get going. And I watch every game, as you do, and I work every game, whether it's play-by-play or pregame, and I can tell you how many times, you know, Dave or Joe or whatever analyst is calling the game is, Rangers getting a little slow getting out of the gate tonight. And then once they get going, they're as good as any team in the league. But you go into the playoffs and you start spotting teams 1-2 goal leads in the first, and they're really good teams, don't rely on those comebacks. So that's what they need to clean up, not worrying about, you know, starting Rempe and getting their revenge. And focus on these last 3 games and get yourself right. Clinch the President's Trophy in the Eastern Conference. Get the right matchups and let's move on and stop with all the histrionics. The Islanders are the more desperate team. They played like it. Now it's time for you to start worrying about making sure that you're right and you've only got 3 games left to solidify all those things.
Well, look, and I think what Rempe would be there for, because this isn't a situation of McDermott and no one got hurt, and I don't know what Laviolette would do, whether it be send a message, this, that, or the other. Is he going to start the Rempe line? I don't think that's going to happen. But what I would say is that you have Rempe out there in case something pops off. that you know that somebody's going to have to answer for it. I don't know if this is a mission of you have to go out and fight this guy and you have to go out and take out Pelech and you have to fight Pelech for what he did to Trocheck. Trocheck can handle himself. I mean, he doesn't fight often, but he certainly has enough of a chip on his shoulder where he would happily fight if he needed to. Lindgren can fight. We know Goudreau can fight. There are guys on this team that are willing to fight, and I think that the reason that you'd bring Rempe in is just because, okay, if this gets out of hand, this is what's going to happen, because anything involving Matt Rempe now becomes extremely heightened. It's not like he's out there seeking fights. I know it seems that way given how many fights he's taken and how many game misconducts he's had. But, you know, if Rempe's not careful with his hits, that, you know, that could lead to something popping off on Saturday, right? You saw it against Jersey, and it spilled over two games later because of the fact that he wouldn't fight McDermott the game after the Siegenthaler hit, and then the Bastion hit, actually. Sorry, I'm getting my hits confused. And then he gets the Siegenthaler hit, and he won't fight him, and then they have to fight the next time they see each other. But to your point, Don, you actually saw last night, as crazy as it sounds, why both the Rangers and the Islanders have flaws. Rangers get off to slow starts, and sometimes they look like they're not even interested in being on the ice. The Islanders get out to a big lead, then give up two power play goals, and they have to kind of hold on to that one goal lead until the empty net goal by Lee in the third. Both things concerning for teams that want to make deep runs in the playoffs, if the Islanders make the playoffs, and something that has to be kind of cleaned up, and these teams get to face each other again in just 4 days. So,
This is a few quirks with the Islanders. They're the best first period team in the league. They're the worst second period team in the league. They're winless in a second of back to backs. Like, there's a few things in all the overtime losses and shootout losses that have piled up on them is the reason that they're in there. But they're not a bad team. I still think they're well coached. I still think they can be a very dangerous team. And I think moving forward, unless something changes over their last four games, that Varlamov is their guy. I think he's played well. He was outstanding, I thought, last night. He had started five of the last seven games. So to me, I think he's the goaltender. I know Sorokin, you just gave him a contract extension, but Varlamov's got experience. He's playing well. He's gotten you into this situation. I think you got to follow through with this. Now, if in the last four games he starts to cool off, then obviously things can change. Four games is a pretty decent sample size this late in the season. But I think from what I've seen, and especially last night, Varlamov's the guy. Now, the Rangers actually caught a break because even though their lead in the Metropolitan Division shrunk to three, it stays at three in the conference because Boston lost to Carolina 4-1 at home. That's a nice win for Carolina. Boston just couldn't. They had like 10 shots on goal through the first two periods, Anthony. It was a great defensive battle for Carolina, and they are the usual suspects there. Scored goals, Svechnikov, Teravainen, Gensel, and Jarvis. So that actually broke the Rangers' way. So they've got a 3-point lead in the conference with three to play. Rangers exclusively home the rest of the way. A complete mess of a Philadelphia team tomorrow. They gave up 9 goals in Montreal. That's back-to-back losses.
They're dead.
To the Canadiens. Philadelphia is now dead. And then you've got the game against the Islanders on national television Saturday afternoon, and then you've got the Ottawa Senators who are just playing for pride at this point. So I think things broke well for the Rangers, so take care of business, win this President's Trophy, win the conference, and let's move on.
Yeah, I mean, look, everything broke outside of them winning their game the way that you wanted it to last night, Don. You talked about it on the Michael Kay Show yesterday and on this podcast on Monday, that it would be in the best interest if the Hurricanes beat the Bruins because you want to try and keep the distance from both Boston and Carolina. And as you said, the last three games for the Rangers, the Islander game is going to be tough because the Islanders need it. The Senators seem to be feisty and seem to be playing hard. I know that they don't have the best record this year, but they have enough players, and they actually have given the Rangers fits at times this year. And you have to see where everything shakes out, because that's the last game of the season, and who knows. But the big game, and you pointed it out, is Philly. I mean, John Tortorella changed his tune from the usual prickly and let's call it negative self that he is when things aren't going his way for his team, as the motivator that he is to try and do that, to saying, listen, there's a bunch of young guys, we're all learning. This is a good team, and you know, remember, this is a process. So I think he's realizing the writing on the wall here.
Process in Philly, they must have loved to hear that.
Yeah, well, you know what? I mean, but in this one, the problem is they don't have a Joel Embiid, right? I mean, this one, they have a 9-3 loss to the Montreal Canadiens, who are also just playing for pride.
Let's not forget here, and I'm not going to try to apologize for what's happened to Philadelphia. Like, I'm just looking at a tweet NYR fanatic, have you ever seen a team give away a playoff spot as badly as the Flyers have? It happens.
Give away.
They're not really that good.
No.
I think they overachieve for much of the year. You lose the guy that helped you overachieve in Carter Hart.
Yes.
And that was killer. And I saw it when I called their game a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you take a look at their team, it's an okay team. They don't really have any stars. You know, they don't have, there's no more Van Riemsdyk. There's no more Claude Giroux. This team is in transition. And they kind of remind me a little bit, Anthony, of like the Giants from a couple of years ago. They're in the process of a rebuild, and all of a sudden things kind of come together. Now, the Giants made the playoffs and won a playoff game, so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. But they got off to a great start. They hung on to a playoff spot for something like, I think it was like 140 consecutive days. But I think anybody that pays attention, after Hart left, that it was only a matter of time before they were going to slip out of it. Now, you don't want to see a team get crushed 9-3. The game was 8-1 at one point.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
It was really embarrassing.
It wasn't good.
So that obviously has got to get cleaned up. But, you know, take a look at that roster and tell me where you think this team should finish. And to me, it should finish out of the playoffs. Now, it looks bad because they played so well early on, but I think, Anthony, we were saying what a miracle it is they were hanging on to that 3 seed in the Metropolitan Division, and now it's coming to roost.
Yeah, look,
they're just not ready.
They were a surprising team all year, and then at some point, and this happens with every team, it's not just the Flyers, when a surprising team holds on to a playoff spot for as long as they do, and then it kind of bottoms out and they don't make it, you say, oh, what a collapse. And it's like, well, I guess collapse by definition of you were in the playoffs and now you're out of it, but then you also have to remember where this team was. Remember, Don, everyone thought that the Islanders had a chance to make the playoffs this year in that division. The Rangers, the Hurricanes, the Devils. Who were you? And you still had Washington and Pittsburgh hanging around because they have Ovechkin and Crosby that you thought, well, they're going to be competitive. All of that happened outside of the Devils. And the Flyers were that team that was in transition. You thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the Metro. And for a large majority of the season, they weren't. But they're 1-6-3 in their last 10. They don't have their starting goaltender. Fedotov has not been great since he's come over, but he's a kid.
No.
But he's a kid. And look, this is trial by fire for sure. He's coming in with a heck of a lot of pressure to kind of save this season for Philly. It doesn't look like it's going to pan out. But you'd rather that happen now and then get a fresh start next year where he's probably going to be along with Carter Hart, if Carter Hart plays, because I believe we saw a report out of Canada that this trial is not going to start before the beginning of next NHL season. So all five of those guys, four of them that are in the NHL, probably aren't going to be coming back anytime soon until everything is resolved over there in Canada. You get a little bit of trial by fire here. You see what the NHL is like, and you have a whole summer to get yourself ready. Yeah, look, is it surprising? It's surprising that a team that's been in the playoffs all year is probably not going to make it, but not when you take a look at the roster and where we thought they were going to be at the start
exactly.
of the year.
Exactly. A great win for Washington. Ovechkin scores his 30th, 18th season in which he has scored 30 or more goals. He really salvaged this year, Anthony, when you think about it. It looked like he was going to like score 15, and people were wondering, is he cooked? And listen, it's not going to be the season that we expect from him, but you know he's still going to score 30-plus goals, and he'll be around 40 away. I guess, what is it now, 852? So what is he, 43 away from breaking the record, which is obviously very doable.
Pretty incredible
full season. But really the story in this one is Charlie Lindgren made 42 saves, gave up a late goal to Kane when it didn't matter with 2 seconds to go, and that game was 2-0 for a long, long time. So a devastating loss for Detroit. So you look at the bottom of the conference, Washington now jumps into the 8 seed with 85 points, despite their minus 40 goal differential and 4-4-2 in their last 10. So Pittsburgh's a point back. Both teams have 78 games played. Pittsburgh's got the tiebreaker, so they're in pretty good shape here. Detroit, they're a point back, also with 78 games played, and they're a mess with their tiebreaker because they've only got 27 regulation wins. So Washington, despite their struggles, are in okay shape, but it's really Pittsburgh's playoff spot to lose to me, considering how they're playing right now. I would really be surprised if Pittsburgh didn't find a way to make it. Matter of fact, I think it's even on the table, believe it or not, that they could still threaten the Islanders for the three seed in the Metropolitan Division.
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy by any stretch of the imagination. I said it probably last week. I said, you know what, I'm just going to go with, I think the Islanders and the Penguins are going to be the two teams that get those last two spots, and it's kind of looking that way. I mean, good win. Listen, good win by the Capitals, and anything can happen, and that's what's going to make this last week of the season so exciting, because there's still so much to determine. In terms of who's making the playoffs and where they're going to be seated, all across the board, really. Look, but with how much Florida's been struggling, Don, struggling 4-4-2 in their last 10, but with a game in hand, the Maple Leafs are only 3 points back of Florida, and they could possibly get the home ice in a series if they played each other.
Crazy, right?
And I thought that Tampa was going to at least have a case to try and come up, catch Toronto, but a three-game win streak for the Maple Leafs, and I'm sure we'll get into that because Austin Matthews is unbelievable. 66 goals.
Crazy, right?
The two of the best goal scorers in our league were on display last night and really showed out. Nathan MacKinnon in Colorado the other. I think it's going to be the Islanders and the Penguins. If I had to guess, I actually think the Islanders will hold on to that number three spot. And I think that's going to be, I think that will be unfortunate for them, because if it is Carolina, Carolina is a tough, tough first round matchup for anybody. And, you know, in any other situation would probably be a division winner, and they still might be. I mean, the Rangers have, despite the fact they're 8-2-0 in their last 10, have shown flaws in the Montreal game, in the Islander game, and certainly in the Penguin game. Even though they won the Montreal game, they've shown that if they don't play a full 60 minutes, they can get beat. And we saw that a couple times this year. You don't want to, at the present moment, with the way that Pittsburgh and the Islanders are playing, those are two teams you really don't want to face. I know that everybody's talking about Tampa, and that's a scary matchup too, but everybody at the top of the East has to be careful, because while they've been coasting because of how comfortable the leads they've had are, there are teams that are very hungry and playing very well down the stretch here that'll probably make the playoffs and make first-round matchups very interesting.
We had three hat tricks last night. Slakovsky had a hat trick for Montreal.
Stamkos, and everyone had that one predicted.
Yeah,
right?
Stamkos had a hat trick. He's got has 39 goals very quietly with Tampa. So much conversation about point with his 44 and Kucherov leading the league in points. But Stamkos has had a nice year. He's got 39. And as you mentioned, MacKinnon now over 50, 51 goals with his hat trick last night. So the Lightning still, you know, maybe can catch Toronto, although, as you said, it's kind of difficult considering the fact that Toronto's won three in a row. So they sit a little bit too far. That's over. But you're right. Maybe Toronto climbs ahead of Florida with that game in hand. If they win the game in hand, you're right, just a point back. How interesting would that be? It's kind of Florida has just been very, very average.
Futures have changed, by the way. Nathan MacKinnon minus 475 now for the Hart on ESPN Bet.
Well,
so it's moving in the direction of Nathan MacKinnon will probably get this award.
Nice win for the Jets. They blew a two-goal lead, but they win in overtime over the Predators. The final score there was 4-3, so Kyle Connor gets the game-winning goal. So you look at the Western Conference now.
But
that
the point, Don, does get Nashville in.
Yeah, the point, yeah. So Nashville, everybody is
amazing
except
job.
The Kings and the Golden Knights, and the Blues, I think we're set, just a matter of seeding.
Amazing job by Barry Trotz and that. Upstairs and just what they were able to do.
Yeah.
You look back and there'll be stories in Nashville of the trip that wasn't in Vegas to the Sphere.
True. But they've definitely
turnaround.
Come back down to earth after that 18-game unbeaten streak. They've been pretty average, just 5-4-1 in their last 10. But they did get the playoff spot. They've got a nice 3-point lead on Vegas for the first wild card. So we'll see what happens there. Kings, a bad loss to the Ducks. So they stay in third and still could very easily be caught by the Vegas Golden Knights. So they may end up being the last wild card
team when
it's all said and done. That's a bad loss with Vegas having the game in hand. We wonder, my whole idea of Connor McDavid finishing with 1,000 points in his career at the end of the season might have taken a hit. He's day-to-day with a lower body injury. So that not only is that's just us talking, but it also can take a hit as far as them maybe catching Vancouver for the Pacific Division. They're 5 points back, but with the two games in hand. Now you look at the schedule tonight, just three games, but that Golden Knights Oilers game in Edmonton is the highlight
on
of
TNT
the night so far, and that's going to be on TNT.
So David Hein will have to explain this to me, Don. Why wasn't Shane Wright playing with the Seattle Kraken for most of the season?
I don't know.
Because he's got four goals in his last four games.
I know, right?
And I know he was sent down earlier in the year, and I'm sure it was for good reason. Maybe he wasn't performing the way they expected, or they expected more out of him in his two-way game. But boy, oh boy, for a team that need scoring. And as a young team and an expansion team, Shane Wright seems like a no-brainer to be on this team. David Hine, I know, listens all the time. He'll probably tweet us with the answer. But, I mean, he scored again last night, 5-0 against a lowly Coyotes team. But, I mean, it was shocking to me that he was down. I was like, wow, I guess he really fell off. But I guess it was a wake-up call to go down to the AHL because he's been on fire ever since.
Well, he's only 20 and just actually turned 20. So he was 19 for a good portion of the season. Ron Francis just feels like, hey, maybe it's just a seasoning. I think they kind of knew the season that last year was a bit of a fluke. So I think they're probably satisfied with where they are right now as an organization, even though it's a disappointing year. They're going to miss the playoffs, but I think they kind of knew what they had going in. So we'll see how that works itself out. But you're right. He's really added a lot to a team, but just like a little too little, too late. So the Central Division in the West still has Dallas with 109, Colorado with 104, and Winnipeg's got 102. So I think that's the way it's going to get slotted, and Colorado-Winnipeg is going to be your first-round matchup. Edmonton can still catch Vancouver, although I'd probably bet they will not. So we might be getting closer to being set here, where you're going to have Dallas be the one seed in the East and take on either the Kings or the Golden Knights in the first round. Vancouver will probably take on Nashville, because I think they'll stay as the one wild card. So we're starting to see what the matchups can be in the West.
I'm excited.
Can be moved around
based on what you're telling me and based on what we're looking at here. I mean, Vancouver, Nashville. Can you honestly say Nashville can't win that? Dallas, Vegas. I think would be more interesting than Dallas, LA.
Yeah.
But I would still probably give it to Dallas. I mean, they're unbelievable. But you never know with Vegas. They got Hurdle back. Who knows what happens with Stone? They get that team full, and that is not the team that has 92 points and isn't a wild card spot or the third spot in the Pacific. That's a team that, was a Stanley Cup winner and got added some pieces to make them even stronger. So something interesting to keep an eye on out West.
Frank Saravelli is tweeting, Source NHL is drafting two schedule versions for next season, one with the Coyotes in Arizona, the other with a relocated franchise playing in Salt Lake City.
Oh, my God.
Fluid situation, a lot of moving parts, details on dual paths and a potential transaction. He's got a story here. So it's becoming a reality now that they're preparing themselves for the possibility of the Coyotes moving to Salt Lake City.
Are there Coyotes in Salt Lake City?
Didn't we look this up? And I think you found that they are. We looked it up. You don't remember?
I don't remember.
While we were doing the podcast, and we found that they do have Coyotes and that they could probably keep the name if they so desire.
Coyotes are found in all areas of Utah. There you go.
Yeah. So that makes more sense than the Utah Jazz.
Which were the New Orleans Jazz,
and they never changed the name.
I'd say color palette change probably. Just changing the jerseys. But I would be okay with keeping the name.
You know what's interesting? With the exception, I guess the Kings toyed with it for a while, but we really haven't had purple as a primary color in the National Hockey League off the top of my head. Like I said,
the
Kings toyed with it. I know there was kind of a shade of purple in the early, I don't know what exactly color it was. It was close to purple with the Ducks when they first came into the league.
Oh, yeah, the Mighty Ducks, yes.
Yeah, the Mighty Ducks.
Shout out Disney.
But considering, when I remember the Utah Jazz, when I think of the Jazz, I don't think of anybody now on the team. I think about, Karl Malone and John Stockton and those jerseys when they were losing to the Bulls in the NBA Finals. I could see a nice purple jersey.
You could have some fun with a purple jersey, I think. The Kings made it look good, I'll tell you that. And I personally loved the Mighty Duck logo and the Mighty Duck color scheme much better than the Duck Bill and Duck Foot Anaheim that they've got going now. I mean, the black is clean, but to have the duck that looked like a goalie mat, that was cool. I liked that a lot better. And yeah, look, Don, it's so funny. I just don't know what to make of this story, because you talk about the fact that they wanted to build this giant complex and everybody in Arizona seemed excited, and the Coyotes, social media is tweeting out all this great stuff, and then you have a story 3 days later saying there's a good to fair chance the NHL believes that they'll be in Salt Lake next year. Like, I don't know where to go or who to believe at this point.
I think it's time to cut bait, and in Utah, the Jazz have succeeded there. It's close to Vegas. Again, so there could be a natural rival there. And you can keep everything in. You don't have to move anybody around, right? They could stay in the Central Division. It's just time. I understand it's a big market. See, that's the thing that you got to stop. All right, you got to put teams where they belong. And I understand that there's other thriving teams in Arizona. I understand it's a nice television market. You want it to work there, but just because you want it to work there doesn't mean it's going to work there. And they've tried. There's no way that anybody, including Gary Bettman, can look in the mirror and feel like that they didn't give it their all to keep the Coyotes in Arizona. They did way beyond heavy lifting to make this happen. And if it's not happening, then you got to move on. Now, you want to debate whether Utah should get it over Houston. I think that could be a nice debate. Again, I don't have all the ins and outs of it. Seems to me I'd rather it be in Houston. You get a nice natural rivalry with Dallas. Houston is a thriving city with the 10th highest population. They've had a history of hockey there before with Gordy Howe and the Arrows, although that was a really long time ago. But again, they know all of the numbers, and they've done the work, and they obviously have somebody out there with a ton of money that's willing to spend on it. So just a very interesting development we wanted to throw out there before we went to the social media. Good work by Anthony finding that. So I don't want to take credit. Anthony sent it to me.
Oh, well, listen, you would have found it too, Don.
I probably would have stumbled on it. Listen, Tony's the first tweet that I was going to read. Any thoughts on the report? And we just gave it. So
yeah, that's
we moved on from there.
We'll see. But I think it would be cool. I feel bad for the fans in Arizona. I like to think that whether we think so or not, that there is a fan base there that does want to see a hockey team and want to see it succeed. I think they've done, like you've said, Don, they've exhausted all opportunities. This is certainly not an Oakland A's situation. I think they've done what they can, and they might have to move on.
Right. They just can't continue playing there, and it's just not working out. They're not going to build you an arena. They're just not going to do it. Scottsdale said no, and they're vagabonds right now in their own state, and now there's a state and a city willing to take them on and looking to expand their horizons sports-wise. That would give them two professional sports franchises in Salt Lake City. So we move on from there. This is interesting. David Hines says, so last month when Michael did the Pusick, he got on Anthony about growing a full beard. Here's an idea. Would Anthony consider growing out a full beard for the duration of the Rangers' playoff run, since hockey beards are a tradition?
I've thought about doing that. Look, I'm obviously a huge Ranger fan. That's a little too much for me. Growing out the playoff beard with the team, to me, is just, it's a little much.
Listen, if you're not feeling it, you shouldn't have to do it.
Tommy, I appreciate the thought, though.
No, I appreciate that our listeners are thinking. Tommy P. says, can we do a bracket challenge group this year? A jersey would truly be a great prize before they're all Fanatics made next season.
Well, we've done this before.
We have. I would like to do it again. I mean, we're just knocking the bracket thing, but we can lean into it. And what happened was, I went out and I said that the winner, I'll buy them an authentic jersey.
I forget how we pulled this off.
RJ can help you, because I know RJ did it when we first tried. And we can get a nice reaction. Could be a lot of fun. So let's work on that. We've got a little time.
I can make a group. We've done that before.
Yeah.
And if it's a private group where we know the applicants and things of that nature, I'm sure that there'll be a way for us to contact whoever it is that won. So we will figure this out.
All right. RZ Ranger says, hey guys, see, this is why I want to avoid the Isles in the first round. They're sneaky, dirty, and the refs will let them get away with a lot in the playoffs. They did the same stuff in the Fugazi 2021 run. Rangers also seem to get injured whenever they play, too. Okay. I mean, if you feel that way, I don't know what to tell you, all right?
I got news for you. Play like you did in the first period. Doesn't matter who you play. You're
right.
Gonna lose.
Yeah, that's a good point. Listen, I'll take on the Islanders. I'll take on anybody when the Rangers are right. When the Rangers are off like they were in the first period, Anthony's right. They can get beaten by anybody. We're sitting here saying, oh, I want Washington. I want Pittsburgh. I want Detroit. Play like that, you're going to be in a lot of trouble, okay? Hey, I'm not going to get into the back and forth. You know where I stand as far as, who butters my bread working for MSG. But I think I've been very fair to all the local teams, and I say what's on my mind. Listen, was that a dirty play? No, it was just they missed it. They missed the cross check. The Dobson cross should have been a penalty, But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I thought Pellick did anything wrong. And has all of Trouba's hits been 100% clean as he's been a Ranger? Of course not. You know, and did Rempe get throw an elbow at Siegenthaler and get suspended deservedly? So, yeah, listen, everybody's got their origin story, all right? I can sit here and talk about every team and say, that guy's dirty, that guy's dirty, this team gets away with this, this team gets away with that. I can tell you one thing. There is nobody on the take for the Islanders, okay? Nobody is sitting in the offices of the NHL going, oh, I can't wait for the Islanders to make a run. That'll be so good for our league. Give me a break, all right? They missed calls. They miss calls because they miss them. They'll miss calls because there's an edict from the league saying, let's screw the Rangers. Does that make any sense, honestly, to screw the Rangers? The biggest television market in the country? One of the biggest fan bases in the United States? I don't think so. But I get it. I love it. It's fun for the rivalry. I love when two teams hate each other. But if you're a Ranger fan, there's one team you want to try to avoid, and one team only.
Tampa.
And that's the Tampa Bay Lightning.
And by the way, If you're going off of the assumption that you don't want to play the Islanders because you think they played dirty, if the Capitals make the playoffs, there's a guy there that's caused a lot more problems for you in the last 5 years than the Islanders.
Yeah, of course. Give me a break.
And I'm not calling him dirty, but he does things that are a little questionable.
He gets in your grill. Jimmy Berger says winning the East would be nice, but I think the Rangers not wanting Tampa in round one is being overblown. Yes, Tampa has the pedigree, but they struggled at 5-on-5 even more than the Rangers, minus 19 to the Rangers plus 3. I still think the Rangers match up well and should be favored. Don't get me wrong. I would predict the Rangers to beat Tampa. I think they can beat Tampa, but I think that's the toughest matchup of all the possible first-round meetings. And why would you want to have a tough matchup in the first round? Now, anybody can beat anybody. And I'm not saying that Tampa will beat the Rangers. But it would be tough because of their pedigree and because of the stars they have on the team and because of the additions of Duclair and Dumba. And do you really want to have to go maybe 6-7 hard games in the first round that can affect you making a deep run? Now, they might play Detroit and go 7 in every game going to overtime. So that's the way the NHL is. But of all the teams that they could play, Tampa's clearly the best. Why would you want to have to take on a team of that ilk in the first round, even though you know you can beat them? Why would you want to do it?
Well, listen, Don, last year we took a look at the way that things could have shaken out, and the Rangers were going to be locked into the 3, and we said, boy, Devils, Hurricanes, you know, Devils are young, but they're really good, and the Hurricanes are a really good defensive team, but the Rangers actually relatively played well against them. In the last couple of regular seasons, they've done okay against the Hurricanes, and you said, boy, you don't want to play a spunky Devil team in the first round, because that seems like a matchup that the Rangers, even throughout the year, didn't really do well against. And what happened? They lost in round one. And if you or I believe that the hardest matchup or the matchup that you're most nervous about is the Tampa Bay matchup, if they match up with them in the first round, it might not end well for the Rangers. Now, again, if they play like they did against the Islanders in the first period, not a lot of games are going to match up well. There are times where the Penguins have looked dominant against the Rangers this year. There are times where the Capitals have given the Rangers fits for as bad as they've played defensively. This is not a season where you look at Boston with 135 points last year and say, well, we know who the best team is. We don't. We don't know who the best team is. And there's every team has their flaws. And if the Rangers go on a stretch like they did in January, February, where they're not playing well 5-on-5 and they're relying on the power play to score, it's going to be a short and quick exit for them in the playoffs. Doesn't matter who they play.
Right, exactly.
And guess what? Forgetting about the fact that, I think I could beat Tampa or whatever, if they're on the other side of the bracket, you don't have to worry about them until the Eastern Conference Final, if you get there. You have to worry about the team that's in front of you, and then most likely, in my opinion, Carolina. Because I think Carolina will win their first-round matchup, and that is not a matchup with Freddie Anderson playing the way he is that's going to be very easy for the Rangers. So
no, well, nothing's easy for sure.
No.
But I want to try to get as easy a first-round matchup as I can, at least on paper.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can rest some guys, and we've talked about it ad nauseum on how they've had I think runs derailed by just the sheer number of games they've got to play in the first couple of rounds. Now, you can't avoid it in the second round because, as you said, it's probably going to be Carolina, and that's maybe the second best team in the league, and you know that's going to be a war. So do you really want to go into that possible war having to go 7 with Tampa while Carolina maybe makes short work of the Islanders or the Penguins or whoever they face in the first round, and they've got maybe a 2-3 game rest advantage on you going into that war? That's what I'm talking about. And again, I got to disclaimer it by saying I'm not suggesting that any of the teams the Rangers will play in the first round would be easy. But any hockey fan can tell you there's a degree of difficulty for every team, and it's hard to believe that Tampa wouldn't be the highest degree of difficulty. Come on.
Every team that's wildcard two has been playing playoff hockey for the last like 2 weeks. Tampa got their start a little bit earlier because they were playing better in general. And now that they've clinched, not that they're not trying, because I'm pretty sure they're locked in at this point where they're not going to be caught for wildcard one. And I think they're far enough away now where Toronto's going to get Atlantic three. So not that they have to coast, but they can kind of take their foot off the gas, kind of like the Rangers, where it's like, you know what? These games are not as big for us, and they're still 7-2-1 in the last 10, the same way the Rangers are 8-2-0 in their last 10. You're talking about a Washington team, a Pittsburgh team, an Islander team, a Red Wing team that are scratching and clawing for every play. And that, you want to talk about a playoff atmosphere last night in Long Island, on Long Island?
Yes.
That was a playoff atmosphere. And the team that really needed the game played a heck of a lot better in the first period. And the Rangers, because they're so skilled and so talented, were able to make a game of it. But the Islanders did enough to hold on, and that is the level that you're going to have to get to if you want to beat teams in the playoffs.
Now, if you want a little bit of a concern about the Islanders, more so than they're dirty, is that Igor's not exactly great against them. Okay, so that might be a little bit of a concern.
Now, last night's game, he had no shot on.
Well, but a lot of that had to do with, I think sometimes it gets overly hyped up to face Sorokin, which was not the case last night. I thought Igor was fine last night. He gave up the empty net goal. He gave up three goals. He didn't stand a chance on any of them.
Nope.
And I thought he kept them actually in the game to allow them to even be in a position to come back. But if you're looking for something, it's like when he faces Sorokin, he gets, I think, a little hyped up because of the whole Russian connection. But at this particular point, the way Varlamov's playing, it might not even be an issue if they do face each other.
Yeah, look, they're going to ride the hot hand there. And the only thing that I'd worry about if I was the Islanders is at some point you got to get Sorokin some work here. But it's hard because they need every game. Because there's a chance that, you know, Varlamov's an older goalie, and he's a very formidable goalie, and he's a great backup, but at this stage of his career, do you think that he's going to be able to go through 7-game series, game after game after game, without Sorokin chipping in some way? And you want to establish some confidence for him before the end of the season, but you got to make the playoffs. It's a tough situation.
He's got, he'll have his opportunities. Just punt. They got 4 games left. He's going to play, for sure. The question is, can he steal it back? I mean, they're playing Thursday against Montreal, then the Ranger game. I would think Varlamov would start that just based on how he played last night.
I feel like Montreal is the place. I feel like you got to start him against
Montreal.
You
can play
Montreal.
Him against Montreal. You can play him against New Jersey. We didn't mention Jack Hughes done with the shoulder surgery, so they lose their best scorer. Devils are mathematically eliminated now, so there could be a couple of opportunities. And then obviously, all the marbles against Pittsburgh. Now, maybe you've already clinched and that won't matter, but you know, that'll tell you the story right there, Anthony, right? If that game's needed against Pittsburgh, then who they start in goal would probably be who they would start in goal if they made the playoffs. So I'm assuming that that it's going to be they'll probably play Sorokin against Montreal because you're going to want to come back with Varlamov against the Rangers. You could play Sorokin against the Devils, and if Varlamov gets beat against the Rangers and Sorokin looks good against Montreal, New Jersey, obviously you can change it around. They gave him a contract. I think they want him to be the number one, but at this point, you got to ride the hot hand, and Varlamov's been the better goaltender. But I think there will be a couple of opportunities here down the stretch without upsetting the apple cart of making the playoffs to have Sorokin play.
I think for the Islanders to go far, they're going to need both goalies because it is not a tandem at the moment. Right now, Varlamov has the job. I think, and Patrick Roy was critical of Sorokin at times in some of the games that they lost on their losing streak, saying that they thought they played well enough to win. And I think the same way that I thought about when everybody wanted Jonathan Quick to be the starting goaltender for the Rangers during the Shesterkin struggles, for the Rangers to get where they want to go and for the Islanders to get where they want to go, their Russian goalies have to be their best goalies. Now, that's a bad example because Varlamov is Russian, but the younger Russian goalie has to be the better goalie.
Absolutely. So it should be a lot of fun. We've got a Friday where we'll pile up all the social media from you, and then we'll actually have our top five. It'll be the penultimate top five, I guess, because we'll probably give you a final one the following Friday, the day before the playoffs.
I guess a playoff ranking top five.
And get you set up, you know, get you all set up for that. So we do have a little bit of time before the playoffs start, because I think we mentioned it on Monday that they're going to be playing regular season games through Thursday, although all the Eastern Conference teams will be done by Wednesday. So Thursday exclusively just Western Conference games. So we'll know the East will be done by the end of Friday, by the end of Wednesday. So then we're talking next Wednesday. So we got a couple of weeks here before we really dive into it. So we'll be back on Friday. We'll hopefully have a clearer picture on what's going on with the playoffs, although I still think the Eastern Conference is going to be muddled by Friday. So let's talk again then.
I think we should.
All right. At Don LaGreca, at Anthony Pusick. Make sure you put in the hashtag Game Misconduct. Back with you again on Friday. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.